Mysticism. Ought we to admit that there is available, in support of religion, a source of knowledge which lies outside science and may properly be described as revelation? This is a difficult question to argue, because those who believe that truths have been revealed to them profess the same kind of certainty in regard to them that we have in regard to objects of sense. We believe the person who has seen things through the telescope that we have never seen. Why then, they ask, should we not believe them when they report things that are to them equally unquestionable? It is perhaps useless to attempt an argument such as will appeal to the person who has enjoyed mystical illumination. But something can be said as to whether we others should accept this testimony. In the first place, it is not subject to the ordinary tests. When a person of science tells us the result of an experiment, he also tells us how the experiment was performed. Others can repeat it, and if the result is not confirmed, it is not accepted as true. But many people might put themselves into the situation in which the mystic's vision occurred without obtaining the same revelation. To this it may be answered that a person must use the appropriate sense. A telescope is useless to a person who keeps his eyes shut. The argument as to the credibility of the mystic's testimony may be prolonged almost indefinitely. Science should be neutral, since the argument is a scientific one, to be conducted exactly as an argument would be conducted about an uncertain experiment. Science depends upon perception and inference. Its credibility is due to the fact that the perceptions are such as any observer can test. The mystic himself may be certain that he knows. But those who are asked to accept his testimony will subject it to scientific tests. Science, as such, should have no expectation, positive or negative, as to the result. The chief argument in favor of the mystics is their agreement with each other. But it is important not to caricature the doctrine of mysticism, in which there is, I think, a core of wisdom. I believe that when the mystics contrast reality with appearance, the word reality has not a logical but an emotional significance. It means what is, in some sense, important. When it is said that time is unreal, what should be said is that, in some sense and on some occasions, it is important to conceive the universe as a whole, as the Creator, if he existed, must have conceived it in deciding to create it. When so conceived, all process is within one completed whole. Past, present, and future all exist, in some sense, together. And the present does not have that preeminent reality which it has to our usual ways of apprehending the world. If this interpretation is accepted, mysticism expresses an emotion, not a fact. It does not assert anything, and therefore can be neither confirmed nor contradicted by science. The fact that mystics do make assertions is owing to their inability to separate emotional importance from scientific validity. This certain and partial unanimity of mystics is no conclusive reason for accepting their testimony on a matter of fact. The scientist, when he wishes others to see what he has seen, arranges his microscope or telescope. That is to say, he makes changes in the external world, but demands of the observer only normal eyesight. The mystic, on the other hand, demands changes in the observer by fasting, by breathing exercises, and by a careful abstention from external observation. We all know that opium, hashish, and alcohol produce certain effects on the observer. But as we do not think these effects admirable, we take no account of them in our theory of the universe. They may even, sometimes, reveal fragments of truth. But we do not regard them as sources of general wisdom. The drunkard who sees snakes does not imagine afterwards that he has had a revelation of a reality hidden from others. From a scientific point of view, we can make no distinction between the person who eats little and sees heaven, and the man who drinks much and sees snakes. Each is in an abnormal physical condition, and therefore has abnormal perceptions. Normal perceptions, since they have to be useful in the struggle for life, must have some correspondence with fact. But in abnormal perceptions there is no reason to expect such correspondence, and their testimony, therefore, cannot outweigh that of normal perception. The mystic emotion, if it is freed from unwarranted beliefs, and so overwhelming as to remove a person wholly from the ordinary business of life, may give something of very great value, the same kind of thing, though in a heightened form, that is given by contemplation. Breadth and calm and profundity may all have their source in this emotion, in which for the moment all self-centered desire is dead, and the mind becomes a mirror for the vastness of the universe. Those who have had this experience, and believe it to be bound up unavoidably with assertions about the nature of the universe, naturally cling to these assertions. I believe myself that there is no reason to believe them true. I cannot admit any method of arriving at truth except that of science. But in the realm of the emotions I do not deny the value of the experiences which have given rise to religion. Through association with false beliefs, they have led to much evil as well as good. Freed from this association, it may be hoped that the good alone will remain.